This is the Better Life, Better Work show, and I'm your host, Allison Crow. I'm an intuitive life and business coach and an irreverent priestess with modern soul medicine for the everyday extraordinary woman or man, and I'm here to help you create better life and better work. This show covers topics on thinking and mindset, business and life strategy, and of course, spirituality and energetics as well. You're listening to the Better Life, Better Work show. More is not better, better is better. This is episode number 29. What's up, friends? That's right, I'm back. Took a little hiatus there. Spent quite a bit of energy focused on only one thing for the last 7 months. And my inspiration is back, my desire is back, and today I'm going to find a way to move forward with this podcast in a way that feels good to me. And one of my favorite ways and how this podcast started out was doing lives. And then, to be honest, y'all, I convinced myself that I had to do it the, quote, official way of pre-recording. And what I'm going to give myself permission to do is have so much fun doing this podcast. And if it is fun for me to pre-record, then I will pre-record. And if it is fun for me to do a live and take that audio, I will do it. Either way, I appreciate you being here. And on with episode 29, we're talking better life and better work strategies. With my friend, colleague, and soul sister, Varian Brandon. Enjoy. Guess who's back? The Better Life, Better Work show. We're back. Hey, this is episode 29, and something happened in January at episode 28. I like did this shout out to entrepreneurs, and then I just stopped. And sometimes like part of me thinks, oh, I just stopped. And then what I really did was I focused for the last 6 months on my one thing. I've never done that in business before, just one thing. I let everything else go, and I focused on one thing, and now I'm ready for the reboot. And so because it's reboot time, I had to ask my girlfriend, colleague, coach, sister friend, one of my besties, Varian Brandon, to come, because I knew that if I needed to get my mojo riled up, this was the woman I wanted to talk to. So welcome, Varian Brandon. Hey. So first of all, let me tell y'all, y'all have got to catch Varian Brandon on her. Do you do that on your personal page or yeah. Your personal profile? She does Sunday Night Lives, and then she does content every day. And I was listening to your last Sunday Night Live, the five C's of something. But one of the things that spoke out to me was sharing content in the context of something. And I don't remember your exact language, but I recognize you as an idea person. And I think that's why we have so fun talking on the phone. And man, when Vary and I talk on the phone, we talk for 3 hours, and I don't talk on the phone, but what we start exchanging ideas. And so today we'll see where we roll. So let me let you check in. What is present for you right now, woman?
What's present for me is that I just feel like this is going to be fun. I love that we're just going to bring parts of our just natural conversations mm-hmm. out into the world. So what's present for me is like, I think this is going to be fun. And I am in anticipation to see what brilliant things we come up with.
Because we are so brilliant.
We are.
So, I do have a couple questions. Okay. What I want to start doing. So I want to, my latest vision for the direction I want this podcast to go. So those of you that are watching live, we will answer questions at the end because we are recording this for the podcast. But the first thing, and here's what's funny. Let me tell you all a little secret. So originally my idea for the Better Life, Better Work show, because I love live video, was to just take the recordings. And then I bought somebody else's story that I had to do it the regular way. Like, right? And so that wasn't as fun to me. I like to interact. I like to feed off the audience. I like live. I like that. And so God bless you people that don't, you know, that need me to have a constant train of thought and can't run around in circles and interact with people online, then this show isn't for you. But those of you who can stand it and want to witness in on the conversation, I am so glad you're here, and please stay. and share. Okay, so here's what I want to ask. I'm going to do a series of, I want to do a series of experts, and you are an expert in a million things. And then I think I'm going to do a series of live coaching and just alternate. Well, I'll do that for however long it feels good.
Yep.
So one of the questions I want to ask the experts each is better life, better work. So let's start with better work. Mm-hmm. What are two elements that come to mind in this moment that are an absolute must for better work?
You know what, Allison, when you just talked about what feels good to you and what is fun, I was thinking to myself, yeah, that's it, because that's definitely one of the things that I have incorporated, especially now that I'm on this side of being an entrepreneur, if you will, working for myself. I always hesitate with entrepreneur because I have thought processes about what entrepreneur means in my mind. You're building this thing to sell. So I have a hard time saying that about myself.
I'm the same way. I'm like, I'm a self-employed woman. I'm not scaling this. I'm not selling this. This is just me and my private practice.
Yeah. So
yeah, it feels
weird, but for the purposes of the people, entrepreneur, I have really decided that it has to feel good and it has to be fun. It needs to be the things that I want to do. And I believe actually that it doesn't just have to apply to entrepreneurship. I think that should be part of the equation for anybody in their work. I did a post the other day just talking about, I think we've been duped that work should be hard, or you shouldn't have an expectation to enjoy work down in your soul, that it's a means to an end to just get money and to live. And it's like, no, because even in my corporate job for many, many years, I loved that job. I would get out of bed in the morning excited about what was going to happen. And then 20 years later, I didn't. Mm-hmm. And it took me a few years after the 20 years to really make a change. But I have decided that is necessary for me, for it to feel good, for it to be fun, for it to be in my wheelhouse, for it to be something that I really feel passionate about. And I know there are the naysayers out there who say, you know, stop looking for passion. You just need to do something that people want. And I've just decided that I am not available for that.
I am not available for that. Either that, or I have a make me say yes price that will put me over the edge. That makes me laugh. I so feel you. And you're right. And I got to admit that sometimes I buy into the overstimulation. I buy into the noise. You know, if I'm really not adamant about listening within. I think that was another live stream you did, was about listening to your intuition and following your promptings. And I'm the same way. I teach my clients all the time. I was like, you know, most marketing tells you, you have to ask what your audience wants. Why? Then I'm giving my audience something I might not want to do. And so, yes, every time I've followed my fun and followed my feel good,
And you're brilliant at that, Allison. I mean, you're kind of the leader in that, in our world. And I believe that sometimes, like natural, you'll hear this normal way of doing things. It's like, well, maybe I need to be normal, but you are the leader. And I mean, nobody else lays in the grass to know what they're supposed to do next. And it would always work. It's like, you've laid in the grass in the United States. I remember sitting by you laying in the grass in London and getting what was the next thing for you. And then that thing would just blow up and be so successful. So you are brilliant at really following your own thing, and it works.
What I'm appreciative is I love the impact that's had on my people, and I still wobble in it sometimes. You know, I get the expert secrets books, and because I like to learn.
Right, right. But you always you funnel it through you. You take it and you funnel it through you.
Well, and every once in a while, I feel like if there is, if I have my own squiggly line, every once in a while, I trip off of it. And what's funny is it's when I don't follow my squiggly line. It's when I'm trying to follow the straight narrow rule. Okay, so the number one is what's fun.
Yep.
What's really fun for you?
Part of what's fun what's fun for me is the inner work. I love what I say is I love taking people places within themselves that they wouldn't go by themselves. And so that's fun for me. And then the other side of what's fun for me is luxury and gifts and all of those types of things.
I can't wait to come to your retreat to get your prezzies.
I love that. I love creating an environment to go deep, but mm-hmm. I love creating the luxe environment and the very pampered and attended to environment for the deeper work. So it's like these two things that come together for me. That part is fun, and helping people really just open themselves up, learning to be vulnerable, especially women like me who spent a lot of their lives in very masculine nature jobs where they showed up so masculine and they've never really given themselves access to that, what I call now that whole spectrum of power, that there's just that default. So I love that, helping other women be able to access that without feeling like they're losing mm-hmm. any of their fierceness and their power and all of that. So yeah, that's fun for me.
Yeah. Really
fun. I do that all day and
that reminds me, I need to send you another payment for my retreat. I've sent my down payment. I'll send you some cash today, woman, because I'm there. Okay, what is a second? So I'm going to ask you two about better work and two about better life. So okay. What is the second most important thing for better work?
The second most important thing better work is money.
I love money more, please. More, my new saying, I'm taking it from my friend. Oh my gosh, having a brain fart right now. Maru, more, please. Money, more, please. Someone came across the wire just before we started. More, please. Thank you.
Yes, money. Because I don't ascribe to the, you know, how people say it's not about the money. Yeah, it is about the money. I like money. I like things that money buys. I like things that money gives me access to. The distinction for me is I like a lot of money. So that what it does is encourages me, it forces me, I'd say force in air quotes, to find ways that I can add value better and better and better so I can make more and more money. Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem with earning a lot of money, creating a lot of money by creating a lot of value. And so it just forces me, like I did a post a few weeks ago, it's like I wake up every single day now thinking about how can I create money? Mm-hmm. And it's because of who that requires me to be. Mm-hmm. Making more money, creating more money, especially on this side, requires me to be creative. It requires me to continue to step past fears and be confronted by all kinds of fears and all kinds of obstacles. And so, yes, I like the money and I like what it requires me to have to become in order to create it. So, yeah, money, better work. I mean, because and the more money you make, it's nothing like doing work you love, making money for it. And when you make that type of money, it gives you so many more ways to impact and to serve in the world. Because look, people, you cannot serve a whole lot being broke. I know we like to use Mother Teresa all the time, and God bless her. And she was
Teresa was loaded.
It's like people like
her organization was, I've heard, I don't have any statistics uh-huh. or documentation, but I've heard that her organization was one of the wealthiest in the world. Oh, it's she like, as an individual, but
yeah, you know, it's like, yeah, phenom, and it's like, just think about all of the good that you can do, for the things in your life if you had more money. So yeah, for me, part of better work is creating more money.
So here's something important I heard Varian say, y'all, listen, you said, I wake up every morning, and here's what you didn't say. You didn't say, what do I have to do to make money? Mm-hmm. My interpretation, someone's language would be slightly different, mm-hmm. but the essence of what I heard is, who do I have to be? Mm-hmm. Who is the person, who is the being that creates value that draws the money in? And I think it is, and I've done the same, I do the same thing in the sense that when I'm remembering who I really am, it is my being that mm-hmm. relaxes. So this is funny. This cracks me up. I got a new client this morning. I'm experimenting with the ads. A new client came in. I don't recognize the name. Hi, honey. I'm so glad you're with us, whoever you are. It's funny because the last 10 clients that have shown up for my program, which is a new way of doing it, because in the past there was always an application and conversation, and but they have come when I am gambling and drinking in Las Vegas, when I am on a mountain and don't have access to my phone. One of them, I was having a political fight with somebody who I'm on the same side with in Facebook. Not real proud of that, but And then this morning, like I'm getting ready for you, I'm not even thinking about creating clients. There were moments when I was in being in an authentic state, not in a doing state, or not in a watching the phone to see if a PayPal thing comes through. And I recently, I know I told you I might hire you, but I hired John Morgan. Sorry. but one of the reasons I hired John Morgan, and he and I have always shared this conversation, it's about the being. And I just realized, oh, I want somebody to hold me. I've been held in the doing of my work for the last 18 months. And I want, like you said, you know, I help people. Well, how is the way you phrased it? I help people be something they didn't know they could be.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how you said it, but that's the essence of what I get. That's the important stuff. It's like, oh, the being. Oh, I love that. So here's what's fun. Fun and money.
Yep.
We got to do a fun and money circle. It's a year of having fun, and how much fun can we have making the most money we've ever made? Let's do high fee. I'm down with high fee. And let's co-lead a circle of how much fun and money. And oh my gosh, right? Like that's what it comes down to, those things. Beautiful. Anything else on better work before we move to better life?
No, I think that's it for now.
Okay, better life. And I've got one that you've taught me about better life, but what's the number, let's start with number two and then we'll go to number one. The number two thing to create better life.
Number two would probably be always sourcing out the next version of who you are.
So tell me about that.
Not being married to a certain version of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That you allow the flexibility within you, who you are, to expand, to flex, to evolve. Because a lot of times we get married to who we think we are or who we think we have to be. And we don't even realize that, because I am a person who really knows myself. I'm very self-aware. I'm always in the journey of learning more about myself. But there are things about me now that 3 years ago, I didn't even realize, because 3 years ago, if you would have told me, are you living authentically? I would have told you absolutely yes. And it would have been absolutely true as much as it could have been then. But there's so many iterations of me that I have gone through over the last 3 years that I wouldn't have been even able to describe or articulate to you 3 years ago. So not being married to, I've always said, even before then, a lot of times I've said that the only thing that is going to be consistent about me is my faith. Everything else is up for grabs. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that I may think about something totally different 2 years from now than I thought about it last year or the year before. And so one of those things is that don't be committed to who you think you have to be or so married to this certain version of yourself. I was running a group, one of my groups, and a couple months ago, and the question that we talked around in that session is, who would you be? What would you be without reputation? And because reputation is this thing that lives outside of you. Mm-hmm. And what happens is, if you're not careful, you start to find yourself always trying to live up to your reputation instead of allowing your reputation to just follow you. And right. It begins to trap you in and imprison you in. And so, yeah, number two would be, don't be married to who you think you have to be. Allow yourself the freedom to evolve constantly, if that's what it requires.
I love change. I love to move. I love to reinvent my life. And when I reinvent it, I it's almost like I spin the bottle and go the direction the bottle goes. Mm-hmm. So here, this is something, I just got an idea off something you had said about reputation.
Mm-hmm.
So the reputation comes from outside of you, mm-hmm. but the other way we keep ourselves stuck mm-hmm. and don't allow for that unfolding is we get stuck in our identity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, see, identity is a good thing to me.
It is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But what I had this huge revelation last week of
certain undercurrents. So this is where one of the ways of working with a coach is like the coach sees the part about your identity that is not serving you and it's made up. So for example, like when you were talking about how fun it is to make money, I realized that deep underneath, and this is one of the reasons I'm going to more place, deep, 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 deep family history, deep conditioning. I even said yesterday, I was talking to Bill, I said something about more money. He goes, "You're just greedy." And I said, "I am not greedy," right? Like, but that's the, like, to make more than I need is greedy. And so that's one of the reasons I'm playing with more please. And it wasn't just a random thought that went through my head. I realized that subconsciously it was a part of this identity that I created and I wasn't even aware of it. And so it has, it's kept me, like, let's say if I would like to be here, it's kept me just underneath that ceiling, and I'm decided to blow my own mind and be really a conscious curator of my identity. So similar to letting your reputation follow you, the one thing we can work on is our identity, who I be.
And I agree with that because I've always been a conscious curator of my identity, which is why I guess I always see identity as a good thing because my identity is unchangeable unless I change it, and which I tell people my identity, which is why I can be in certain situations where people think it would impact me a different way, and it's like it's all because of my identity. How I identify myself is always the foundation of how I exist in the world. So yeah.
I think that's one of the reasons you're such a beacon of light and why I send my clients to you all the time. I swear half my clients are working with you and I love it because I'm like, you know, I can teach you what Varian's teach you, but Varian is living and I'm still learning what Varian, not just what Varian teaches, but who you be. And one of the things that we're all amazed at you is that you are, it's so obvious that you're conscious in your identity and you stand so grounded. Firmly yet soft. You are not demanding other people. I say who, I say when. You are just in the, I have the pretty woman theory. And, you know, first she's a prostitute and a victim and giving away value. And then she, I say who, I say, and sometimes, especially lately, it's like, no, I'm trying to defend who I am. You need to see who I am. And Barry, and you're just like, this is the next point I get to, unoffendable, right? And this is one of the reasons that does with me. And I do see most people, you tell the story about your mom inoculating you when you were little, you more than anybody I've ever met as a human being are secure and confident in that because you've been cultivating it your whole life. And a lot of us wait till 45 to start cultivating that. So we're baby gardeners. But that's one of the things, like, you know, it's like, I want to be like Varian, not that I want to live where Varian lives or do what she does or whatever, but it's, I want to be unoffendable. And to me, that is the ownership of the identity. So I just, you know, me, ideas run all
Of
over.
course.
Okay. So what's the number one thing of better life
Well, I mean,
for
yeah,
you?
I think that's it, to be unoffendable. What I would also call this to be unattached. I'm not attached. I'm not attached to I can't think of many things that I'm attached to. I realized last year that I was pretty attached to my house. And then I had to go through the process of unattaching myself from that. But it is there, I'm not attached to most things. I mean, nothing. I live my life, and sometimes it sounds extreme to people, but I live my life in a way that everything, I'm willing to walk away from any and everything if it impedes on who I am in the world. And it sounds extreme when I say that, but I am willing to. And what people, I have to constantly make the distinction. That doesn't mean I want to. That doesn't mean I have to. That doesn't mean I desire to, but I am willing. And because I'm willing, I am always the highest negotiator. I'm always in the highest negotiating power because I'm willing. There is nothing and nobody that I'm not willing to walk away from to maintain my autonomy and to maintain my right to be. And that's down to my mama, who I love with everything.
No, I get it. And it's it is, it's that It's that steady holding on to who you are. There's nothing that will cost you that. And what I also hear is that you're willing to feel the discomfort with it. All right. Right. So y'all don't make the mistake that Varian's like, oh, I think it's so fun and I have my house. I think it's so fun to walk away from a friendship or this or whatever. One of my coaches says life is 50% awesome and 50% shit. And what I get is that one of the reasons your life is so awesome is because you allow, and you would never call it shit because Marion doesn't use that language, but you allow the yuck and you know that the growth is greater than the yuck. Mm-hmm. And the growth doesn't come without the yuck. Mm-hmm. And the growth doesn't come without holding the difficult emotions as they and processing them and learning from them. And so it's that willingness to be uncomfortable. You know, it's one of those sayings in coaching that it's gotten so trite, but it's so true. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, your zone of discomfort is the one that gets you to the next iteration of who you be.
And it's for everything. Like you said, it is so true. I mean, a lot of times that's why cliches get on your nerve, because they are true and they've been said for so long and so many years.
Right.
But it,
we're ignoring it.
Yeah, it's like, because we have been conditioned or socialized. And I mean, of course, as human beings, our natural tendency is to want pleasure. That's mm-hmm. our natural tendency is to want right. pleasure. Mm-hmm. But I believe we've been conditioned and also socialized that that is what we should be seeking after mm-hmm. instead mm-hmm. of the whole conversation of mm-hmm. pleasure is wonderful and pain is not a bad thing. Pain yeah. is usually a portal. A lot of times I say pain is a portal to something else, to the next level. Without pain, I think about those people, especially little children. I don't know the name of the disease, but they can't feel pain.
Yeah.
And so they can harm themselves and they wouldn't even know to tell mm-hmm. their parents, or they wouldn't even know that they should seek help because they can't feel pain. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if we can't feel pain, a lot of times we would not be able to be who we are, know what we know, because pain signifies to us that something is not always something is wrong. Sometimes it's something is wrong, but sometimes it's something needs to be looked at. Something needs to change. Something needs to be observed. Something needs to be nurtured. It can mean a number of things. So when we can expand and embrace pain from a different perspective, not that we're seeking it out all the time, right. but that when it shows up, that we cannot totally want to resist it, but we can begin to look at it and observe it and be with it in a different way. Mm-hmm. I believe that our life takes on a greater richness and power.
Right. Well, when we start telling ourselves, so right, like the brain is the way the brain works is, and one of the reasons we run away from pain, right? We're seeking pleasure and avoiding pain is because the brain's trying to keep us alive.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I've been using the analogy, the brain is a puppy. And if you don't train that, you're going to have a big disaster as a burn out dog. It can be cute and it can be annoying.
That's
so we've got to train
that's
it.
That's an appropriate analogy for you.
We can train it, but we have, you know, one of the reasons I'm really good at training puppies and our foster puppies is, people are like, how did you train that dog not to pee in the house? Because I train it before it has a problem.
Mm.
I am obsessive and probably overtraining it. And so we do the same thing here. We begin to train our brain. So here's one. I can do difficult things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of us go, if I feel that pain, I will die. Mm. I can't have my heart broken. I can't go broke. I can't be rejected. Yes, you can.
Mm-hmm.
No one's asking you to say, gee, that's really fun, Sally.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But I can do difficult things. That's what my divorce taught me. I did not sign up for that, but it taught me I can be rejected by the one I loved. I can, you know, business has taught me over and over again. I can do difficult things. And then when we approach that and go, I can do difficult things. I can do pain. It'll be fine.
Because I mean, when you think about the elite, when you think about the elite who are physically elite, physical mm-hmm. elite athletes, part of what makes them elite and part of what has gotten them to the level that they've gotten to is their ability to withstand pain mm-hmm. in their bodies. And I feel the same way about being emotionally fit and being able to increase our emotional pain tolerance. We have no problem. You'll hear a lot of people saying, you know, I have a high degree of pain tolerance in their bodies, you know, and it's like increasing that emotional pain tolerance
mm-hmm.
where you increasing it, that you can take more. Now, that doesn't mean that as these athletes are feeling pain in the body, they don't have massage therapists, they don't have physical trainers. Mm-hmm. It's not that they're not working. It's not that they are neglecting the pain, but they continue to expand the amount of pain that they can tolerate in their bodies that allows them to be elite. And mm-hmm. if we want to be elite in our own lives, whatever that means for us, it doesn't have to mean whatever it means for anybody else.
Right.
If you want to be elite in your own life, you are going to have to increase the amount of emotional pain you can tolerate.
Right. I get on that little spin machine at my I'm not going to an hour-long spin class. I'm hitting the video in my gym at my neighborhood, and I do this little 20-minute thing, and the whole time it's so cute because the leader of the one I like to watch, and the reason this is the one I like to watch, she says, "You can do this. Your legs are strong." The whole time she's saying, "Your legs are strong," and it's good because I'm in my subconscious mind, and even coming out my mouth is, "This is hard. This is hurt. This sucks. I can't do it." But it's so funny. 20 minutes of doing that. And while I'm in it, it is not fun. Make no mistake, it is not fun. But when I am done for the next 24 hours, I feel vibrant, alive. I feel connected. I feel connected to the earth. I feel connected to the sky. I feel like I've used my body. I feel strong after doing that. And it's so the athlete thing is you know, we're not here to punish ourselves, but we are pushing ourselves. We are taking ourselves to the limits because of cognitive dissonance, right? Mm-hmm. Where you go to the edge and then the edge stretches and it can never shrink back. Mm-hmm. It can never shrink back. And I don't want to shrink back. One of the first things you said was that we always keep evolving. We always keep evolving. There is no end line.
Yeah.
6 feet under. And then who knows what happens on the other side, right? Like there is no end line as humans until... Mm-hmm. Until yep. you're 6 feet under. And so we may as well keep having fun.
That's right.
Tell us a little bit more about being unoffendable.
I don't think we realize how much power we have in how we interact with other human beings. We've been taught that everything that we get from other human beings, we have to deal with it or we have to process it in a certain way. And being undefendable, you've heard me say before that somebody can do something offensive, but that doesn't mean I have to be offended. Mm-hmm. And what I find is that people think that when people do things they don't like or people do things that they think is wrong, for some reason they think that they have to process it in a way that they get angry about it or get because anger is fine for my, but they get in a state of offense. Mm-hmm. They think that somehow they're doing something well by doing that. And they don't realize that, no, what you're doing, you're actually putting yourself in a place of bitterness and yourself in a place where it now restricts you from being able to be free in your own life. And when you can understand that you can live a life of being unoffendable, it actually begins to melt away some of your fears, because a lot of times people don't want to engage with other people because they don't know what people are going to give to them. And let's be real. There's some strange, crazy, whatever adjective you want to put on it, people in the world. There are some insane people in the world doing some insane things. There are some people who they will say things to you that you wonder what in your mind would tell you to say that to another human being. So it doesn't take away that people are doing all types of things. It puts you in the power seat of really making the decision to decide how all of those things are going to impact you. Being undefendable does not mean that you don't stand up to people for yourself. It does not mean that you don't make people accountable for what they do in your presence or in your world. It means none of that. It means, but I get to decide. I do not let anything come into my life and dictate how I have to feel about it, how I have to engage with it, what meaning I have to give to it. All of that stays with me. And because that stays with me, there's no situation that I ever fear going into. There's no situation that I'm ever apprehensive about, because I may not have control over anything else, but I have control over Varian. Mm-hmm. And that gives me peace and that gives me power. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things that I wish I could bottle it up and give to people into the world, because people don't realize it. It's like, if you say, like I've said to people before, if somebody says the N word to me, yeah, that's a bad word. And thank God, I've never had anybody say that to me. It's like, yeah, that's a bad word, But I don't automatically have to become this enraged or whatever person about it. I don't have to now think, you know what, all white people or whatever people are crazy. I don't have to now think something is wrong with me. I don't have to do any of that. I can choose to be like, that's an ignorant person, or that's a person who doesn't understand, or depending on how I feel, that could be a person that I want to engage with to give them some options of the seeing something better. But I don't feel compelled to have to be a certain way because of what happens outside of me. And that gives me so much freedom. And it really is the number one reason my life is so good. And when people hear that, they might be like, "I should, you know, my life is good with all of the stuff that happens in my life, just like happens in everybody else's life. I am not immune to all of the other stuff that happens in everybody's life, but it's good because I choose for it to be good. And I intend for it to be good. And I am adamant about it being good. This is the only one I got." It's like, so I'm not.
Well, and you also don't. So a lot of times, especially in the personal development world, there are people like, "I don't watch the news and I don't do this and I don't do that." You still stay informed. You're still aware and present. So it's not like you're an ostrich going, "Life is good." You know, you're not digging your hand. And so this is one of the things I really, you are my mentor in this. And I have allowed myself to be offended and miserable and hurt and attached. And I have been given so, ever since I started doing this work, watching you and listening to you and taking your class and having you come and teach at Camp Starheart, I have had 10 times the opportunity to be unoffendable. And I have failed most of those, but I have learned through every single one. And I am going in deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And I realize, just like when I'm in the car with my husband, and my husband, like, he'll get not, it's not full on road rage, but he'll get road rude. There's a new word, road rude. And I'm like, the only person that can hear that road rudeness is me and you. And it's irritating me. And I wasn't the one that was driving like a jackass. And so, you know, and that's such, that analogy is like, the only ones that are hurt are right here. And so when I'm offended by what my neighbor is doing, which is a real life scenario, then it's only making me irritable and impacting the people I talk to and be. And so it was interesting, like you said, choice. And I heard Spirit tell me 2 days ago, get off that neighborhood Facebook group because you hate your neighbors. Well, that's not serving me. So here's another concept. I think John Morgan uses this word. You might too. Is it useful? And so, like, being on my neighborhood Facebook page, there is nothing useful about it for me. I lived in 7 houses before I ever had a Facebook page with a neighborhood. And I may have had buttholes for neighbors, but I never knew it. And so that, in that situation, it's not useful.
The thing about being unoffendable from my perspective is that I'm not shocked by what people do. And and here's the thing, because what most humans, I find, they forget that they get on people's nerve too. I am very clear that I get on people's nerves. I am very clear that people don't like some things about me in the way that I show up in the world. I'm very clear that I rub some people the wrong way. I'm very clear that I say stuff that people wish I wouldn't say in the way that I say it. I'm very clear about that. And so it's like, I'm not shocked when I feel that way about other people, because I know people feel that way about me. What we do as humans, we think everybody else is out offending us, and we think we're not offending nobody. And it's like, please, the same way that person get on your nerve, just like you said, you know what? You hate your neighbor. Some of your neighbors hate you.
Oh, yeah, I know they do.
And it's like, and it's like, some, we forget that, though. You know, we forget that people, we do stuff that people don't like. You know, we forget that. And I'm always in a constant awareness and clarity that, you know what? I get on my family nerves, too. I get on my family nerves when I go into my hermit thing and I don't want to go anywhere and I don't want to do anything and they want me to come over. They want to do, I get on their nerves. I know that they do. I get on my friends' nerves because I do stuff in my own time, and then I get on people's nerves. And so I'm not shocked that other people get on my nerve. And because of that, I don't think that they shouldn't. Right. I think that then I have to, like you hear me say all the time, I have to self-manage.
One of my coaches calls it running other people's manuals. And that analogy, it literally, like, oh, I just picked up my neighbor's manual and I'm trying to run her manual. The only manual that is mine to run. And she has the right to run her manual. I mean, you've taught me that. And so it is tacky when I say it to them. That is not what I am endorsing. I did that the other night. I was like, oh, you have a right to be a rude neighbor and make assumptions. It was really tacky. Now, that thought would have served me if I had kept it to myself. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It didn't serve to put it out there. That's where I failed and sinned and was being I was being directly aggressive. I think that's the other thing. I think there's something in me that apparently responds to the heat. And so
I don't think that's all bad. I don't have this thing that like a few months ago, maybe last year, I wrote something on my Facebook page and I was talking about this lady who got out of the car at the airport. I saw that her family was coming to pick her up, and how her husband just sat in the car while she was putting her luggage in the back of the truck. And so I wrote about this, and I'm like, and then the son didn't help the sister or her put the thing, and I'm like, what is this?
And that would have been my family.
I wrote all about that, and somebody was like, well, you know, you don't know if that person had just, maybe they were sick and they couldn't do it and we shouldn't judge. And da, 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 da. And I said, look, I get what you're saying. I said, but I don't have a requirement that I don't judge. I don't have that requirement of me. I have a requirement to know when I'm judging. That's the requirement I hold for myself, to know when I'm judging and decide, do you want to do that? Do you want not? I don't have a requirement for not to judge. And so sometimes even within my undefendable, I don't have a requirement that sometimes I won't speak directly to what I think is happening. You still have a right to do it. I don't take away your right to do it. But sometimes if I want to voice my opinion about it, I will. So I don't see that as not being unoffendable if you choose to. My thing is that I always want people to be in choice. Don't let it be a reaction that you had no control over, that it was a default. If it's something that you choose in power, sometimes you just gonna have to tell people stuff.
Well, and that's one of the things I love about you. That's what I'm saying. You don't avoid those. So at Camp Starheart, and I have been very open with some of my, some of my questions and my curiosity and my discomfort around the way life coaches and racism is handled online and politics. And I have called you and said, all right, you're a Black woman. Help me understand your perspective. And then you had a totally different perspective and I felt crazy. Anyways, you facilitated this conversation with a few other women of color and a whole lot of white women who are new to this conversation and who were wonderful in it and either disagreed and said, I don't understand. And what I loved about that is you were able to be in a hot conversation and manage and facilitate that conversation without anybody losing their shit. Nobody reacted. You were able to in the hot conversation, keep it cool and respectful. And it wasn't neat and tidy is not the right word. It was, everybody was open. Their heart was open. When somebody was confused or said, I don't agree, or somebody felt passionate about it, it was still there. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't tempered, but it was so respectful and beautiful. And that's what I want to be able to do, is I want to be able to be in that dialogue and sometimes go, that's none of my business. Mm-hmm. Sometimes go, it is my business to not be a bystander.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to be able to slow down before I dive in. Right. And so I'm retraining my brain to not react. I'm retraining my, and that's the thing, is part of that process for me is somebody has the right to do this. Oh, and you're exactly right. Oh, by the way, I'm an asshole too. Right. And that's been super healing. And so I just think, I love that you are sharing the Be Unoffendable stuff with the world. I hope you run that class over and over again. I think you should go do a TED Talk on the big TED stage, not just one of those little local ones. Go get on that big TED and talk about that, because as the world, that will help us so much.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah, when people really begin to embrace it and integrate it, I mean, I know we hear this all the time in our world. It's life changing. It transforms your life. But it really does when people begin to integrate it. And like you said, it doesn't happen overnight, but even just the awareness is so transformative.
Well, you said it earlier, I have peace.
Yes.
The things that can spin somebody out the wazoo, like you said, somebody calling you the N-word, or, you know, you're just like, I'm not gonna let that stop my life. I'm gonna go on, keep being fabulous me. Mm-hmm. Right? And how many times have I stopped my own life mm-hmm. by reacting to somebody else's malarkey?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not useful.
Right. Right.
Right. And then there are other times when it is useful to advocate for somebody. And so it's about, you know, it's both and discernment. But until we learn how to be unoffendable, we can't be useful in yeah. those situations, because otherwise it's going to escalate into something nasty.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh. Yep. Absolutely.
I'm still learning. And that's the other thing, I get passionate. It's like, yes, God loves me just the way I am. And this is an area where I can grow, and it is useful, and it is powerful, and it is impactful for the people around me. And I just love that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take a breath together.
Yes.
What are you really passionate about right now?
I'm really passionate about pushing the envelope on what I'm hiding and helping other people do the same.
Ooh, what are you hiding? Tell us.
You know what? When I say right now, I don't feel like I'm hiding anything, but I think I do. And that's the passion in, because I have this desire. And it sounds funny. But I feel like I'm still, and people who know me would be like, how can you think that? But I still feel like I'm lacking an edge. And I don't know if that's because over the last 10 years, I was in the work of really expanding my power spectrum of not just being in that default of masculine. Da, 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 da. And so as I did that work, it feels a little bit like there's a part of my edge that I lost. And I feel like as I continue to uncover the things that are hiding in me, the more, the better that is. Mm-hmm. And so at this like very moment right here, I don't feel like I'm hiding anything, but I'm sourcing and looking for that every day. Like I'm sourcing to think, okay, am I thinking something? I'm trying to think, because it was a post that I did 2 days ago, I can't remember which one it was, but it came up in me and I felt the not wanting to post it. I felt the wanting to hide.
Ooh, I felt that lately.
You know, I felt the, oh no. And it's like, and I posted it anyway, but before I would have not paid attention to that, I would have just thought, oh, okay, I don't want to post it, but I'm paying so much attention. It's like, ooh, that was a you wanting to hide. And why did you want to hide? Mm-hmm. And some of it is too, because how do I continue to sharpen that edge in alignment with who I am as a woman of God?
Mm-hmm.
And what I began to see is some of that is not who I am as a woman of God, but who people think I should be as a woman of God. Mm-hmm. And so I'm constantly sourcing for where are you wanting to hide a little bit, or what are you hiding? Mm-hmm. Because I truly believe that's how I continue to expand my power.
Mm.
So I'm most passionate about really uncovering those elements of where I'm hiding and pushing through that and stepping into that edge a little bit more.
John called it last week when I was talking to him, he called shining the light on those dark places.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just little shadow. They're not negative. They're just little shadow places. And when you talk about wanting to hide, and this is so funny, because you know me, and we're my student and Share Your Heart, Show Your Work. And in the advanced group three or four times. And, and I have felt so hidey.
Mm-hmm.
I've never felt so protective.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what is offendable in me? Right. And I've had a lot of family discord, both with Bill's family and my family. And a lot of that is there. You know, I've never wanted to separate my private and my personal, and I've considered like, I'm just going to go to Instagram where I can't, where, you know, or it's fascinating. And then the other thing you said about going to the masculine, you know, we're in this hard masculine, and I find a lot of high achieving, overachieving women, elite women do this. And when we learn to bring the feminine in, there is this, our brain is so trained that that is power, that we feel like if we are being soft, or if we are just being okay in the present moment without the forward motion, that's so new to us, right? That's so new to us. And so that's one of the reasons I have this philosophy of both and, because I can both be very satisfied with the simplicity of my life and still driven.
Yep.
But I notice it's a little symptom, a little after effect, side effect. It's a side effect of beginning to soften. We don't lose our power, but all of a sudden we're like, wait a minute. Something feels weird because I'm not running a 90 mile an hour race.
And it's like, and for me, it's like, because, and I think that's the part of the side of being undefendable, that nothing really bothers me. And so it's like, where's that space that I can allow bothering enough for a part of the edge that I believe is necessary? And like I said, people who know me and experience me, they'd be like, oh, you got an edge. But it's like, yeah, but it's not nearly as much of an edge as it could be and it used to be. And it's the piece of, it can't be how it used to be for me because I'm not her anymore.
Right.
Because that girl with the edge, that woman with the edge, it was all because it was about me. It's like, right, I would cut you and leave you bleeding and didn't care what happened.
Right. But you even had a place before that too. Like before you left your job, and I remember talking with you once about, I was like, Varian, you need to make your post public because you had certain friends list. And, and what I see that you have done now is that you have opened up to your Black friends and your white friends and your Christian friends and your non-Christian friends. And you've allowed those all to be in the same audience.
Yeah.
In a way that before you were trying to sort, I like that word that you use, like we're sourcing it. Mm-hmm. And even when I ask you, this is what I am creating in my life, is that it's, you know, another version of slow down to speed up, but it is, I always go inside to ask first. Go inside to ask first, go inside and get in alignment and then check in. Of course, I'm going to have a reaction. Of course, I'm going to even be bothered or triggered or whatever. And if I slow down and go to the source, I will hear the correct answer. So it's listening to, I came across this concept in a book I was reading the other day. Actually, I'm rereading this chapter over and over again. And it talks about how ego is inflamed by the overstimulation of our nervous system. Well, when we are sourcing from the outside, our nervous system is overstimulated by media, by sound, by noise, by, you know, we're bombarded from the outside in, and we can think of a thousand ways. And no wonder we get so reactive. And that's why they say, pray, meditate, have your quiet times, go in nature, because we stop the stimulation and we can hear from the inside out. And, you know, our friend Isabel talks about red zone, yellow zone, green zone. So she talks about the stress response. Oh my gosh, we're all living in the stress response 24/7. And we have a new normal that is highly inflamed, especially since social media, and we're just, our access to information in one day is, this is Allison Crow Scientific Institute of who knows what, but in one day, the information that we get with our devices and, you know, even here watching this now was more in one day than it was for 2 years of our life, 20 years ago.
Probably more years than that. I mean,
yeah, exactly. All right. Right. And so it's, we don't, like, here we're having this experience, but what is that doing to our brain? Yep. And when our brain is doing this, because it's overstimulated, Oh, what is it doing to our hearts and our ability to listen? To listen, not just to other people, but to ourselves and to our innate knowing and to God that resides in us and wants to love and direct us. And so all of a sudden I'm going, oh, there is only one thing. What's the most important thing in life and business? Listen inside.
Yep.
If I listen inside, then I know the next step, because that is the teller of my next step. And to listen inside, I've got to get out of the overstimulation, y'all.
I believe it's going to be, and I mean, I am so glad I was born in this dispensation of time where I have access to all of this. And I believe 50, 60 years from now, there are going to be a whole new spectrum of diseases that are connected to.
There already are.
Stimulation and stuff.
There already are. These kids, the studies they've done on depression. The studies they've done on depression, these kids being raised with these phones. And I can't talk about these kids. That phone is a problem for me. And I am aware of it and working on it. And I'm contemplating, I'm sourcing. How is it that I want to use, because social media has been so wonderful for me. But even with my curated feed, I still find myself absorbing, and not even negative information.
It's information.
Just information, right? And so, like, I thought, well, what if I, like, right now I feel a little bit more peace on Instagram. And then one of my clients, or I'm doing this program with John, and he doesn't use a Facebook group. He uses Basecamp. And so he says, when you are in Basecamp and all, you can interact and do everything you can do on Facebook, but you are only in the circle. When you're in the circle, you don't have other things bringing you away. And so I'm really checking in, because this is where I do connect with a lot of people. But what is the most useful way to my mind, body, and spirit to use this? Because I am suffering. Many of us, I think, if we were realistic, would suffer. And one of the biggest arguments, not we don't have a huge argument, but one of the things that I do that irritates my husband and I'm not proud of is, you know, we get in the car to go somewhere, and if he's driving, just out of habit, I pick up my phone.
Yep.
And he's like, put down the phone. And I'm like, ooh, 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 ooh. And it, so I set it down, but then I noticed my urge. I noticed my urge. And that's the addictive nature of what these things are. Very, I think you're very right. And I do think it's beautiful for, not beautiful. It's painful, but I can do this pain to grow. And I want to grow out of my addiction to that device. I want to grow out of my addiction to, I was so proud of myself for, I've been reading the Outlander books instead of personal development. And I was so proud of myself. When Bill and I went to Vegas, I read another book and I got to chapter 40 on the plane. And I haven't read chapter 1 through 40 in anything because my attention span. And so, like, my commitment to read paper books without my phone around and read more than one chapter at a time, because I want to literally train my brain to go longer, train my brain to go longer. Anyway, we could talk. We could have a 18 hour.
I know, right? That's what we do.
I love you so much. Thank you for coming. Thank you for being a part of the reboot of this. What would you title this episode?
Ooh, I don't know.
I don't know. With Varian Bradison, Brandon, and Allison Crow. I do. Look at all of our friends who are here. So let's do shout out to our friends. We got Joanna, Michelle. We got the whole Camp Starheart gang. Oh. Michelle, Anna, Amy Logan, Amina was here. Barry was here. Stacy was here. I don't know if Kay was here or not. I can't see who all else is here. But those are the people who commented. So we thank you for watching. I am going to I'm going to have fun doing this podcast. And I'll keep doing it while it's fun. And if
That's
it
right.
stops being fun, I'll pause it again.
That's right.
I just love you and appreciate you. You can watch Barry and Brandon on Sunday Night Lives. Anything else you're selling or sharing or enrolling or want to tell people about how to reach you, get in touch with you?
Just come on over to me. Find me on Facebook. Come on over to me on Facebook. Join the conversation with me. Listen to all the stuff I like to talk about. That'll be the easiest way to do that for now. So, yeah, head on over to my Facebook page. Follow me and get in conversation with me. I love that.
Awesome. I love you, sweetie. Thank you so much.
All right.
We'll be right back.
This show is Leroy Brown and Clementine approved. They're here to encourage you to think about adopting before you shop for your next pet. More is not better, better is better.